Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blogging Theology. Today, I am delighted to talk again to Dr. Musharraf Hussain. You're most welcome, sir.
I'm delighted, Paul.
Salam to you. Dr. Hussain, for those who don't know, came to Britain from Pakistan in 1966 with his parents to the Yorkshire town of Halifax, where he memorized the Quran, learnt Tajweed and basic Arabic. After completing a degree in biochemistry at Aston University, he went on to gain a science doctorate. He worked as a scientist until 1990 and then decided to dedicate himself to serving the Muslim community. In 2009, he was awarded an OBE for his services to community relations in Britain. And in 2019, he was awarded the Imam Wal Amal Special Award by the Muslim News for his translation of the Quran. By the way, this is it, the majestic Quran, guidance and good news for the mindful. So get your copy. Today, Dr. Hussain has kindly agreed to talk about, now this is really interesting, how scientific studies show the positive effects of moral and spiritual intelligence on human well-being, and how the findings show that the Quran's teaching on moral and spiritual values like kindness, generosity, forgiveness, and prayer have a positive impact on human health and welfare. It's a very interesting subject. So would you like to introduce us to the subject, sir?
Assalamu alaikum, Paul, and your wonderful viewers. I believe that religion and Islam in particular are about actually developing us, developing our sense of understanding. First, who we are, what is our identity, where we come from, where are we going, and what is the purpose and meaning of life? I think that is the really ultimate purpose of religion, so that we can dedicate and we can truly value and recognize and realize the Creator, the Lord who sent us on this world. So it's really about enabling us, empowering us. It's about actually educating us. Now, that on one side. Now, let's look at the British educational system. What does it do? I remember, you know, my teacher, Mrs. Kelly, in the primary school, how we were taught the verbs, the grammar, how we were taught how to do the arithmetic. And then in the secondary school, the principles of science and history, of mainly about British monarchs, actually. That's what history meant.
Really?
Okay. Yes, history. Because, you see, Britain is, of course, the center of the whole universe.
Absolutely.
So everything began here, and everything was founded and discovered here. So we had this amazing history, you know, teachers.
Often discovered by Muslims first and then rediscovered by the British, who then just conveniently forgot that actually other people had discovered it first. But hey.
Yes. Well, so so in secondary school, we had these amazing lessons in history, science, And then in university, you know, 3 years of studying biomedical sciences, looking at the anatomy, the biology, the physiology, the pharmacology, even, you know, how drugs work. How does your aspirin actually bring about that relief of pain and getting rid of your inflammation? How does it do that? You know, all those functions. And what I saw, you know, in those 15 years of the British, going through the British education system, was it was actually preparing me to solve problems. It was preparing me to understand the physical world, how the plants photosynthesize and produce the glucose molecule. How do they use water, the sun, and all those amazing minerals to produce all kinds of weird and wonderful chemicals? You know, can you imagine, Paul, a single leaf of a plant can produce something like 4,000 different chemicals.
Wow.
you know, for human beings to produce one chemical, that is ammonia, that is, the fertilizer, have to have acres and acres of factory to produce just one chemical. But look at, you know, this little leaf has the capability of producing something like 4,000 different chemicals. You know, the tobacco leaf is well known and researched, okay? That has at least 4,000 different chemicals. You know, that is the magic, the miracle of God. So what I'm comparing is, here we have the British education system, which is preparing me and preparing our children and our students and our citizens to be able to understand the world around us so that we can solve the problems. And that is what seriously scientists do. You know, we look at how can we help to solve this. My own PhD was about how do we, find some ways of treating diabetes, for example, looking at the mechanism of insulin secretion. How does that little glucose molecule excite the beta cells to secrete the and stimulate them to produce and to secrete insulin. So these are, so what we're looking at is, education is about helping us to solve problems. But of course, it's all about the physical world, the outward world.
Right.
Well, I believe that Islam, like other religions, is also preparing us mentally and inwardly to actually get some very deep understandings about the nature of human beings. And this is why I don't believe philosophers or scientists actually can solve us and help us in understanding who we are, where are we going. So poor Darwin or Dawkins are not going to be able to tell us where we come from. What is the nature of human beings? What is the purpose of human beings on this earth? We're not going to have that, because it really is something which is to do with the unseen, the ghaib, the inner world, the world that is beyond the conscious. And now, you know, our scientific and neuroscientific learning is at such a stage that they're able to actually see the conscious through the MRI, through the brain sort of scanning. You know, we're able to actually see what is happening at that level. So that is why, my thesis and what I'm proposing is, and I think believing scientists are now beginning to see this.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Amazing connection between what we call the moral intelligence and the spiritual intelligence. So that is the reason I talked about the British education system is that our British education system is actually creating an amazing intelligence in us to be able to understand the world. That's what it's all about, isn't it? So the higher your IQ is, you're able to get to the best courses, the best universities, and you can then solve the problems in a better way. That's an intelligence, okay, to do with the outer world. But what about the intelligence that I need to be a human being, loving, caring, forgiving, patient, thankful, appreciative, and someone who is really pleasant? How do you do that? Well, we believe that from the very beginning, you know, God has been guiding humanity. And that is what is known as the moral intelligence, the spiritual intelligence. And some social scientists now call that social intelligence as well. But I think, you know, for believers, social intelligence is actually moral and spiritual intelligence. So my definition, I'll do the definition further on my next slide.
Okay, so we'll have a look at the first slide.
So,
thank you.
Yeah, so here, you know, we're looking at some scientific studies. And when I say some scientific studies, I'm looking at when I wrote this paper back in 2012, there were more than 500 different scientific studies that were actually showing how moral values like kindness, how spiritual intelligence like devotion and worship and contemplation and meditation have positive impact on human well-being. Okay, so that was then, but now I'm sure there will be thousands more scientific papers. Yeah, and on the next slide, I'll share that with you. Yeah, the next slide. So my argument is this, that the Quran makes development of moral and spiritual intelligence mandatory. Now, that's a big claim, and some people might raise their eyebrows, but no, it's not unfounded. It is very, because, you know, if you look at, what does the Quran say? Yeah, yuhallazina manustainu bisabri wassalah. Believers seek help through patience and prayer, okay? And then it says, ya yuhallazina manusbiru wasabiru. Believers, be patient. And also encourage each other to be patient. Ushkuru, be thankful, okay? Waghfiru, wa'afu, forgive others. And so on. So what are these? These are moral values which the Quran is actually commanding. So when the Quran uses the imperative, well, that makes it compulsory for the believer to do. So what I'm showing here to you is that, yes, of course, the moral imperatives, the spiritual imperatives in the Quran are actually mandatory. A Muslim must carry out these duties. Just like aqimu salah, pray, wa atu zakah, and give zakat are mandatory. Why isn't being patient? Why isn't being thankful? Why isn't being forgiving? Why isn't being modest not mandatory, when the Quran uses exactly the same imperative form of the verb? So therefore, yes, they are imperatives. Now, scientific evidence shows, in fact, you know, whereas the legal imperatives in the Quran, the ulama are almost agreed on that. There are around about 500 verses of the Quran known as the Ayatul Ahkam. You know, the verses that deal with legal side of our lives. Just 500 out of 6,200 odd verses. Yet, the verses to do with patience, with forgiveness, with moral and spiritual intelligence are actually in thousands.
Wow. Okay,
so that's my argument. So next point I make here is that here we have lots of scientific evidence now that shows that moral intelligence and spiritual intelligence are actually hardwired in human beings, and they have a positive impact on your well-being. So what are we saying here is very simply this, that these research on moral behavior is now proving almost a direct relationship between, for example, you know, and I'll give you more detailed examples later of, for example, people who are appreciative, thankful, and they value whatever is given to them. They actually acknowledge when something is given to them, they acknowledge that this is good and they feel something in it. You know, they feel positive about it. What the researchers have been able to show is correlation between, you know, that feeling of appreciation, of thankfulness, gratitude, and well-being. How do you measure well-being? Well, you know, in science, there are in biochemistry, for example, which is my field, there are many ways you can actually measure human well-being. And some of those things are like looking at the levels of hormones like cortisol. Now, cortisol is a stress hormone. When you are stressed, the levels of cortisol are raised. And obviously, when you are relaxed, calm, relaxed, the levels fall. So by measuring the levels of cortisol, you can actually show, you know, that something has happened, you know, to the stress, it has gone down. And of course, blood pressure, cardiac output. And of course, there are other ways of measuring, and we'll share those with you. So there is the scientific evidence that is showing a direct correlation between moral intelligence, spiritual intelligence, and well-being parameters that, you know, I've just mentioned some of them. So I therefore conclude that, you know, Quranic teachings do have a very firm scientific foundation, not that, you know, we believe God speaks the truth, the scripture, you know, the Bible, the New Testament, the Old Testament, the Quran, and other religious scriptures all actually impose and expect their followers to have these, to develop this moral and spiritual intelligence. Okay, so we now move to the so what do we mean by spiritual intelligence? Well, this is my definition of spiritual intelligence. It comes from my book, The Seven Steps to Spiritual Intelligence, which is published by Cube. And spiritual intelligence is understanding the meaning and purpose of life. Practices that enhance human connection with God and help human beings to become divine representatives with God-like character and moral values. The spiritual person is able to see beyond the physical and material world. And that is why I said poor Darwin or poor Dawkins will not be able to see because they are blinded. You know, they are blind in the sense they have no, you know, they are unwilling to accept this spiritual and beyond the physical. Okay, they can't see something beyond that, and of course, it's not unscientific to believe in the invisible, the unseen, because you know that is, you know, well known. Okay, let me. So that is what we mean by. Is that okay, Paul? The I've just defined spiritual.
Well, thank you for that. It's very interesting indeed. It's interesting that the often some Muslims talk about the scientific miracles of the Quran, meaning, you know, the extraordinary statements about, say, the expanding universe, or descriptions of the embryo, or you know, the difference between salt water and fresh water, and so on. And these are remarkable. I agree. But this is a very different take. Is actually looking at other facets of the Quran's seemingly scientific statements, or statements that are corroborated, I should say, by the recent scientific research. This is a refreshing, different approach to science and the Quran than the usual one that I hear.
And it's ongoing. It's very recent. It's actually happening now. And wow. And places like America and the research laboratories there, particularly neuroscience, you know, there is a huge interest because it's about well-being. And as the communities in the West age, you know, they're more concerned about the well-being. And what they're beginning to see is that the more closer the communities are with their religion and they have moral and spiritual intelligence, there is proof and evidence now to show that their well-being and their health is better.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you very much for that. So Yeah, back to the slides then.
Yes, well, this is the next one about moral intelligence. Moral intelligence is the knowledge and skills for having a godlike character. Now, can I just clarify this? Some of my brothers might say that, well, this is very shirky, isn't it? This is shirk, godlike character. What we mean there is actually, you know, takhalluq bi akhlaqillah, which is we are expected to acquire the divine attributes. Why does Allah talk about his beautiful names of Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim, Al-Ghafoor, Ash-Shukur, As-Subur? Why does he talk about that he's patient, he's the most appreciative and rewarding, that he is, you know, the most kind and compassionate and Al-Kareem, the general? Why? Because God wants us to be like that.
Right.
And but the difference between when I say, you know, we having God-like character, what we mean is, of course, when we are kind and then there is Allah who is kind. Well, there's a world of difference between Allah's kindness and my kindness there. No? First of all, it's very limited. It is also a gift from God bestowed upon me. It is temporary. It's fleeting. Whereas God's kindness is, of course, qadeem. It is from ever and forever. And it has.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is his personal kindness. It is not bestowed on him. So I just wanted to clarify that before
clarification. I think it would be
giving a big fatwa.
Yeah, I can see some people might have misunderstood what you meant by that, but I think you've clarified perfectly the Quranic understanding. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, the whole idea of moral intelligence is actually to have that knowledge and skills, you know, that help us to have godlike character of compassion, patience, forgiveness, justice, controlling the ego, to manage anger, arrogance, greed, and jealousy. That is amazing intelligence, to be honest. This intelligence, Paul, is far more difficult and far more powerful, far more worthier than the intelligence that our education system is able to develop in the best graduates of Oxford and Cambridge. Seriously. And this intelligence is far more valuable, you know, because it makes us truly who we are, human beings. You know, whereas our great prime minister of the past learned his, you know, skills from Oxford University and Eton School, you know, and we saw how miserably he failed. Because whereas this intelligence, if he had this intelligence, he would still be the prime minister. He would still have these amazing, you know, qualities to serve humanity and goodness, you know. So I think really, you know, the ability to solve economic problems and our technological problems and our political problems is one. But until and unless it is actually underpinned by moral intelligence, really has far less value. And this is why I think one of the down problems with our education system is it lacks moral and spiritual intelligence. It doesn't pay enough attention to it. I think this is one of the biggest negative things about our modern education system. Anyway, let's move on to showing that the role of religion, the role of Quran and the Sunnah, the role of Islam is about developing this amazing intelligence.
Before you continue, if I may, just make a quick point. I mean, this is something, as you've already stressed, that these values which are found in the Quran are found in other religions as well. And this helps to make connections, social cohesion, social bonds with people in Britain and in other countries. Rather than simply seeing it as an alien other, actually, the Quran is is promoting, endorsing, and recommending values which are of our shared humanity.
Universal values, Paul.
Universal.
Islam does not claim monopoly over them. You know, we have no monopoly. In fact, you know, I will talk later on, perhaps, that, you know, Aristotle talked about the four cardinal virtues. Mm. And Imam Ghazali, rahmatullahi ta'ala, the great Muslim theologian, and also Ibn Masqiya, one of the greatest Muslim philosopher in ethics, also not only endorsed what Aristotle had talked about, the four moral virtues, but he expanded that into 10 moral values from the Muhammadan sallallahu alaihi wasallam's seerah, okay, and from Islam and from the Quran. These are universal values. This is shared between the Hindus, between the Christians, between the Buddhists, between the Muslims. All of them share these. And that, in many ways, actually shows the universality of religious values and the significance of religion, really. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I wanted to point out, you know, this is just to, because we're going to be talking a bit about neuroscience, it's important to know what parts of the brain do what. It's well known now that the prefrontal cortex, this is the forehead, and what lies behind it, the cortex just immediately behind my forehead. You know, this is actually concerned with social thinking, awareness, really about self-control as well. And it's very interesting, you know, the Quran talks about Abu Jahl having nasiyatan kadhiba. You know, the Quran talks about his forelocks, his forehead, as being one that was in error because he was thinking wrongly. You know, he was misguided. He had lost his self-control and the understanding of his own purpose and meanings by being in opposition to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Anyway, that's social thinking. And then, you know, we have different parts of the brain actually doing different things. And how do we know that? Well, what scientists do is, when if, for example, in an operation, if particular part of the brain dies or is chopped off, or you will see that a particular function goes missing. And from that, you know, it's deduced that, oh, well, that is this particular function. For example, you know, one incident, a very famous one, is about modesty, you know, sense of decency, of haya. Mm. Now, that is particularly controlled by amygdala here, which, you know, and when certain patients who lacked that, what they found in them was, they had completely lost self-control. They became gluttonous, and they also became very sort of promiscuous, almost, you know, propositioning even to their brothers and sisters. And, you know, they lost that because they had lost that particular part of the brain that controls sense of decency and modesty. So here we have, you know, this idea that, yes, in the brain are centers which control different parts of our moral different moral values, okay? You know, altruism is something which actually all religions promote, which very simply means being selfless and giving for the benefit of others, really. You know, many people would think, you know, Dawkins often talks about the selfish gene. He says, No, there isn't anything called altruism. There is nothing called philanthropy. There isn't generosity. There isn't the sense of being good to others. We're just being selfish. We're doing it because we're going to get something in return. No, that's not true, actually. The reality is that human beings are, you know, we always want to. Except if you're a psychopath, actually, and it's been shown with psychopaths. And that's about one in a million. You know, psychopaths. Okay, as Mengzi, the Chinese philosopher said, all men have mind which cannot bear to see the suffering of others. And even when we talk about the psychopaths, even they actually have some kind of sense of compassion as well. So yes, this is the reality. You know, this is, we are hardwired to be kind and compassionate.
Can I just ask you? You put a quote there from the Prophet Muhammad, upon whom peace be, who said, "You are not a believer until you love for your brother what you love for yourself." What is the meaning of the word brother in that context, do you think?
Well, you know, I think we should take that brother and a sister. We should also take it in a wider context, not right. just Muslim brother, to be honest. I think we are brothers with all human beings. Right. In the sense, you know, when the Quran says, إِنَّمَا الْمُؤْمِنُونَ إِخْوَةٌ, believers are brothers and sisters to each other. That's a Quranic verse. Absolutely. Meaning that they, just like a blood brother and sister have another level of fraternity and closeness. We have we are children of Adam alayhi salam. And therefore, we are brothers and sisters with our Japanese, with our Chinese, with our Indian brothers and sisters. We are actually all brothers and sisters in that sense.
I just want to clarify, because the word "their brother" is ambiguous. I mean, does it mean blood brother? Does it mean just Muslims, brothers, sisters? Or does it have that wider...
Human beings.
It means human beings.
It's really human beings, to be honest.
Yeah, it's important that is understood, because it shows that, as you say, the universality of the Prophet's teaching.
Yes,
he's not just focused on one particular group in this saying anyway. Thank you.
Okay. Now, as I said, we are hardwired. What do we mean by hardwired? Well, this is precisely what I mean by this. Now, this is just an example. This slide shows you, you know, the human nerves and how, you know, the nerves are linked together by the axon, and how they have these dendrites, and how many of them do we have in our brains? Well, there will be billions and billions of them. Of these nerves. This is what the gray matter is all about, actually. It's these nerves carrying signals from one part to the other, and then all of them interconnecting. So you can see the connections are in billions as well. And that is what makes it so complicated and so versatile and so powerful. That
I know. I've actually seen on Twitter, of all places, occasionally you see actual footage, obviously very recently filmed, of these cell bodies. And you can see them interacting, is it like in water or
That's
something?
Right. And well,
it's
yes.
It's really extraordinary how, and you think, wow, that this is clearly not random. This is, but in my view, obviously by design. It has such sophistication and elegance and intelligence. Even you feel that they're purposefully interacting, and that this is a meaningful designed environment and activity. At least that's how it appears to me.
Absolutely. It, and of course, with the modern sort of devices of magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, you can actually begin to actually see the color changes as, you know, the chemicals move and interact with each other. It's just amazing, really. It's a marvelous. It is. And when we say marvelous, we mean it's magical. It's actually miraculous, really. Mm.
It does seem miraculous. It does seem extraordinary, remarkable. You know, it's not just, oh, it's just a bit of the world around us. No, it looks remarkable and astonishing. Mm-hmm. And science has uncovered this for us. Something it was before, it was the unseen. It was hidden from us. And now we can actually observe it happening, which is remarkable.
Well, I'm here showing you another hormone. Oxytocin is a very well-known in biochemistry, and it's a hormone that is really responsible for dilating and relaxing the muscles. And again, what they've been able to show, you know, in research is that when we show generosity. What do we mean by generosity? Generosity literally means to give others without them asking. You give it without expecting anything in return. You give it freely as well. So it's giving freely without being asked for it and without expecting anything in return. Okay, that is called generosity. And, you know, we often exercise that. For example, when you donated money for the floods in Pakistan, You don't know those poor people who've been affected. You will never see them ever in your life. You don't expect even a thank you, okay? You're just doing it because you believe, you know, in being good and kind, because they're your, what we're just talking about, your brothers and sisters.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like next door. Yes, they're 4,000 or 5,000 miles away, but they are your brothers and sisters. There is something telling you inside that, look, that's my brother and sister. I need to help them. And this is what I can do. I can send them £50 so that they can have a whole month's food. When you do that, Paul, what happens is you get a release of this oxytocin. And so, again, you can measure this, you see. Wow. So when you've done a charitable action like that, and you can take your blood samples and show, wow, you know, the oxytocin went up, and you also feel inside you, you know, you feel much relaxed, calm, you feel good. That is, you know, that is almost, you know, the Quran saying in ahsantum li anfusikum.
I'm sorry, you're about to quote the Quran. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, when you do good, you are the first beneficiary of it. Wow. So whenever you do any good, I'm sure, you know, all of us have experienced that. Whenever we do good, you know, we feel something good about it. We are the ones who benefit first and foremost. Your blood pressure goes down, okay? Your heart rate comes down. Your cortisol levels will come down. You will have more of this oxytocin, okay? And you'll begin to love and care, you know? And of course, this is a hormone of love. And if we don't have enough of that.
I like that expression, hormone of love. That's a good one.
Yes, and seriously, you know, and I think when we see that our world is lacking love, I mean compassion and care for others. That's what love means, you know. In the Quran, the word is "walladina amanu ashaddu hubban lillah." The believers intensely love God. The word hub. You know, is loving but what that very simply means, you know, it's being compassionate, loyal, willing to help and willing to be with others. Really, that's what it is. And I think when we lose that and we're competitive, and we in a world that is run by economists, politicians who only know economics the best. And who only know how to make profit and how to compete successfully and be big rivals, you know. And then, of course, we're going to be lacking oxytocin, motherly love.
What I was thinking of saying, on a social level, absolutely, but on the individual level, you say that our acts of loving kindness can trigger oxytocin. Biochemical reaction. But I was just wondering about the opposite. If acts of selfishness or of anger in a negative sense and other kind of bad actions, what kind of a biochemical effect do they have on us? Presumably they do. And it's interesting that these higher virtues have a biochemical effect on our bodies, and you mentioned blood pressure and other things. And
of course, yes, I'll talk about that later on. Actually, it's further on. You are jumping lots of slides there. So,
okay,
you know, you know, this next slide. What I'm saying is why religious stories and parables are very effective in developing the good character and positive behavior. Psychologists believe that hearing a vividly told story about kind behavior has the same emotional impact as actually seeing the act itself. And it encourages you. You know, the other day I read this story, and actually in Urdu, and then I've translated it into English. It's about this very spiritual writer who goes to on a spiritual retreat in the desert in Sindh. Sindh is, of course, the eastern southern province of Pakistan, and it has a very big desert called Thar. So he says he does his spiritual retreats in the desert of Thar, and he wasn't very far from the settlements, which you know, and it, what would happen is people, you know, would pass by, and there was a young boy, perhaps 15, 16 years old. He would pass by every day, and he would be carrying on his head a basket full of melons, which he would be selling in some other settlements or the market town nearby. But and behind him was always a little girl, gayfully, walking, dancing, prancing behind him always. And one day, you know, he says, I stopped him and bought a melon from him and said to him, okay, look, what I see is your sister, who's only 5-6 years old, why don't you get her to walk in front of you so you can see that she's safe? Why are you keeping her behind you?
Mm-hmm.
And he says something really moving. He said, you know, when I'm walking, the sun is on my face and the basket that I'm carrying makes a big shadow. And I want my sister to be in that shadow.
Oh, wasn't it lovely? Yes, that's very powerful.
And he say, and then he went on to say, I don't leave her behind at home because she's an orphan. We haven't got mother and father. I'm the only one. And I want her to be, you know, in my shade. You know, that, I don't know. I mean, I experienced that, actually.
It's a holistic existential. It's not that you're processing information. There's a human wholeness to it. And that's extraordinary.
And he says, you know, Ashfaq said, his eyes began to roll with tears. He couldn't just control himself. He said, what this desert boy taught me is something which I couldn't learn from chapters of reading about kindness. Okay. What an amazing. So and that is where, you know, telling stories like that. Yeah. And that is why the Quran tells the stories of the kindness, of generosity, of certain people, and so on.
We see this in the gospel, in the Christian gospels anyway, the stories that Jesus tells, the parables, which are basically fictional stories. They're not actual descriptions of something that happened, but they're stories to tell a message about God's loving kindness or how we should treat our neighbors and how to be good and compassionate. And these apparently, you know, had enormous impact on his fellow Israelites. And also I'm reminded of in Islam, the work of Rumi, the Mithnawi, this extraordinary massive poem, you know, thousands.
The Troubadour of Love. That's what he is.
Which is apparently the second most popular book amongst Muslims after the Quran. And it's just chock-a-block full of stories just like the one you have told.
Well, we could do another program on that as well, Darren. Okay. I love Rumi. I read a lot of him. And so the point of, you know, this was about, you know, so the psychologists believe that when we hear these vividly told stories, they actually have an impact on us. They make us feel and experience. And when you've experienced something, you want to do it. So we've just heard about the kindness of this young boy, how he's kind to his little sister. I hope, you know, this moves us to be kind to others as well. So that's the point about, you know, we were saying, Jenna. So I just want to sort of conclude with this. You know, the scientific findings will help to raise the confidence of young Muslims in the legitimacy of science. And hence, I'm using it the other way around. Not that science gives us a legitimacy about our religion, but the other way around, that look, you know, what our religion teaches, we have what we call Ainul Yaqeen, Haqqul Yaqeen. We truly believe in it. We don't doubt it for a moment. Therefore, you know, a lot of science is good. You know, therefore, we need to study it in order to, you know, of course, improve our world, as well as, of course, learn the mysteries. And by learning the mysteries of moral values, how they impact us, I hope it will really make us appreciate and say, you know, I do need to be patient. I need to learn how to be patient. Now, that is another whole story. You can learn how to do that through my book called 7 Steps to Moral Intelligence, inshallah. And then, you know, these new findings will help us to overcome the growing divisions in the society and encourage joint thinking. Joint thinking here, I mean, science and religion together. We have had no problems. We shouldn't have those problems either. You know, it's really an amazing one of...
This shows me that what you just said there about joint thinking. Sorry, we just go back if you went just that previous one A couple of days ago, I read from a speech that Prince Charles, as he was then, the Prince of Wales, gave on Islam and the West. And he said one of the things that Christianity had lost was this sense of joined up thinking, science and religion together, body and mind together. But this is something, he said, Islam had retained, the integral understanding of the universe where these things are together. So it's interesting that our current king in England, anyway, had actually
speech of his in 93 at Oxford Centre for Islam is amazing speech, to be honest. And I think it just shows that he's going to be an amazingly good king who will be truly a defender of faiths, not only Christianity, but inshallah, Islam as well. But, you know, coming back to this whole notion about the relationship between science and Islam. We've never had this problem, actually. This is a Western problem. Because of the church, really. Let's be honest. It's not Christianity, but it's the church's problem. Church had a problem, and its fathers had a problem with science, and that was because of their, you know, being blinkered. And their own serious philosophical problems and others. But alhamdulillah, in this world, we've never had this problem of between science and religion. So I'm suggesting, you know, to our viewers that science is a positive force. However, we need to underpin it with those amazing moral, with that amazing moral and spiritual intelligence. Now, I believe that, you know, if we had this moral and spiritual intelligence, we would never have invented the atom bomb, hydrogen bomb. Even having that capability, we would not have invented them, because we would say, well, this is totally madness. It's crazy. It is mutual, you know, destruction, and it is madness of the highest order. No human being should be thinking of destroying others in such a large number. You know, we are only allowed to fight combatants. So if there is somebody who's pointing a gun at you, you can defend yourself, but you can't just destroy, cities upon cities and carpet bomb them and destroy them like that. That is, this is totally, what I'm saying is, you know, we really need to understand that science is a great force, but only great if it has that moral and spiritual backing in it, okay? There is another slide I wanted to share, Paul, and that is, you know, something which Albert Einstein said: science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. That's really interesting, cool, you know, because, you know, the Quran is always saying to us, in fact, it's inviting us to observe. And, you know, and what is science? Science is actually observation of nature, measuring and weighing. You know, it talks about, you know, measuring and weighing and keeping balance. Aqimul wazna bil qist, okay? Wala tukhsirul mizan. You know, don't play with these equilibriums that God has created in the universe, okay? In the nature. We need to remember that. And what is the benefit of thinking in this way? I think when we begin to think morally and spiritually, what will happen is, this is what will happen. You know, when we are selfish, there is only us and, you know, the world around, everybody is them, okay? We're a little island, okay, of us, me, just us, or my little family, or my little community, okay? And the rest of humanity, the sea of humanity is them, somewhere cut off. And that's where, you know, you said about the brothers. Well, the Prophet ﷺ expanded this sense of brotherhood. He says, all this is, these are your brothers. Why are you confining yourself to this little island of brothers? Go beyond, okay? And it transforms it to this. So now them is very little. Everybody's us. You know, this is where we feel part of humanity, where we feel the pain of our brothers and sisters in China, where we feel the pain of our brothers and sisters in California, where we feel the pain of our brothers and sisters in New Zealand, you know, thousands of miles away. We can feel that we are all knit together in our humanity, really. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the purpose of moral and spiritual intelligence. You know, it develops that sense of being one. I'm going to stop with that. And inshallah, on another occasion, I'll be happy to share some more, some more details, actually, some findings on, for example, on gratitude, inshallah, Al-Aziz. Okay.
I love that, because one of the definitions, correct me if I'm wrong, of the word kufr is a word that's often bandied around by some people, meaning the unbelievers. They're not Muslims, the unbelievers. But it also, I think, and perhaps you can correct this, it has a sense of ingratitude, the sense of not appreciating the gifts. And this is a very important sense of kufr. So anyone could be kufr in that sense. You can be a Muslim and not be grateful.
Yes. Yeah. Word kufr, Paul, comes from the verb kafara yakfuru, kafiran. And kafara in Arabic and kafir in Arabic is the farmer.
Yes.
Why? Because what does the farmer do? He covers up the seed.
Yes.
When he plows, he actually covers the seed up. Okay. And the problem with a kafir, technical kafir, okay, that's literal meaning of it. Technical kafir is somebody who covers up the reality of being the slave, the servant, and the creature of God. And someone who should be submitting, he covers up that seed of truth, and he covers up that solemn pledge that we all made when Allah had the primordial conference of the souls. In that conference, all the souls pledged that, you know, when Alastu bi Rabbikum, am I not your Lord? Kalu bala. All the souls said, yes, you are. That is the seed of faith that lies within our souls. And what the technical kafir does, he actually covers up that seed. Therefore, that seed cannot now flourish. It cannot actually grow into the tree of Islam, the tree of submission and dedication to God and worship of God. And therefore, that's why it's called a kafir. And it is in a way, it is, of course, a derogatory term. And that is why, you know, the Quran actually, Paul, only in one place says, Ya ayyuhal kafirun. It says, Ya ayyuhal lazina amanu, Ya ayyuhal nas, O people, O believers. About 80 or 90 times it says, Ya ayyuhal lazina amanu. But only once does it say, Ya ayyuhal kafirun. But even that, deniers and disbelievers, only once. But even that is preceded by Qul. Tell you, Muhammad, you tell all disbelievers, La abudu ma ta'budun. I am not going to worship what you worship. You are not going to worship what I worship. Why? Lakum dinukum wal yadin. You have your religion. I have my religion. So even there, you know, we are not supposed to, show contempt in a way, but you know, show that we accept our differences. We believe in those differences, and we accept that. So yes, I think we have to be very careful how we address our non-Muslim friends and fellow citizens and neighbors in a way that shows that moral, beautiful character of a true believer of respect, really, for humanity. I think that's really very important. You know, when we talk about we live in a multicultural, multi-faith society. Islam is, of course, in Makkah, it was a multi-faith society. In Medina, it was a multi-faith society. So Islam actually grew up. Islam was founded in that, and therefore it knew how to respect. When, you know, Rasulullah was sitting on the with some disciples and a procession of funeral passed, the Prophet ﷺ immediately stood up and somebody quipped, "Oh, he's a Jew." And the Prophet ﷺ said, "But didn't he have a soul of a human being?" He said, "We have to show respect." He said, "We have to show respect to, you know, the
It's interesting, isn't it? The so-called Constitution of Medina. People can just Google it, the Constitution of Medina. This is the in Medina, where in the Prophet's time himself, and it guaranteed religious freedom for non-Muslims, Jews and others, Christians and even others too, to practice their faith. So this was a genuine multicultural, multi-religious society which guaranteed religious freedom. And this was during the time of the Prophet in Medina. He didn't have to do this, you know, but he chose to have this kind of society.
And that Misaki Medina, Brother Paul, is just an amazing that in the 7th century, who would dream of showing that kind of respect to other religions and to other groups of people? It would only be somebody who had that amazing character, moral intelligence and spiritual intelligence, that of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
The last thing I want just to ask you, if you could just say a few words, if you don't mind, you mentioned the biochemical reactions of the body when we do loving kindness, acts of loving kindness. I was just asking about the contrary, if we do acts of selfishness or cruelty or harshness, how does that impact us in our bodies, in our biochemistry?
Absolutely. You know, sentiments and emotions like anger and arrogance certainly are well known to trigger things like the rise of cortisol, the stress hormone, they raise your blood pressure, and of course, I'm sure many of us will have experienced this. We don't need to say, you know, when you're angry, what happens to you? Your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure rises, and it's not a good state to be in. Okay, no. You feel miserable. You feel very bad. You know, and same thing with when you envy others. You know, and same thing happens when you're actually greedy as well. You know, when you're greedy, those evokes emotions that really are miserable and Scroogey. You know, that's what Scrooge was about. Yeah. You know, it gives you that kind of, and you live like that then. So, yes, all those negative, and they are mainly what are known as the cardinal vices of Aristotle. Aristotle talks about these. And of course, our Muslim philosophers like Ibn Maskawiyah, who was one of the greatest ethical philosopher of Islam in the 12th century, him and then, of course, Imam Ghazali and many others have further elucidated and explained how, you know, these four cardinal vices are explained in the Quran, how they have branches. You know, they'll actually, arrogance isn't just one, it's got dozens, and in my book, I could have shown you actually, there's a diagram where, you know, arrogance is what leads to belligerence. You know, you're picking fights, you know, you're being boastful, you know, you're being vain, and all sorts of many other. So, you know, these are amazing sciences, and I just wish that, you know, this is why I said to you that our education system really does an amazing job in terms of helping me to become a great problem solver of understanding the nature and doing technological problem solvings and all sorts. However, it leaves the moral intelligence and the spiritual intelligence raw and underdeveloped to such an extent that, you know, we can't even control our obsessions. And we've become very selfish. And I think this is one of the tragedies of the Generation Z, who is almost deprived of moral and spiritual intelligence. And this is really very dangerous. And I hope, you know, we Muslims should really be spreading the moral and spiritual intelligence and of the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the seerah, the akhlaq. Okay, that is what it is. It's a great... science.
And this has got to be one of surely one of the reasons why Muslims are now such an important part of the West, Europe and America, is actually to, as you say, it's not a novelty what you're talking about. It's not a new thing. It is found in other religions, but it's been lost, largely been lost because of secularization and falling away from faith. But Muslims, in my experience, have not fallen away from faith, generally speaking, and so retain the sciences of the soul, as well as which are now confirmed by the sciences of science. Yes. And so have something to share and give back to the communities, even to reawaken what they once had of their own. So it's in awakening the indigenous understanding, but coming from newcomers, or not so newcomers now, who are bringing this message of reminder and renewal and revitalization in this holistic way. So I think this would be the role of Muslims in the West if they choose to do it.
Absolutely. I agree with you that we've got to give back something to the West. West has given us beautiful homes. It's given us nice cars. It's given us the comfort of our material comforts. But what can we give back? And I think this is what we can do. You're right. And how do we do that? Well, by having good family lives, by having good relationships, by showing that, you know, socially we can get on with one another. We've got strong social bonds. We've got social societies. You know, we know how to mediate, reconcile. We know how to overcome our social problems, family problems. We can live together as good human beings. Because, you know, Britain has 9 million people who are in solitude and are lonely. You know, that is, you know, who live alone. You know, that's a very big, you know, number. And we've got to say, no, look, we've got to encourage families and keep the families together and strong and be loving and caring. Yes, we have a great deal to give, to be honest. Yes.
Fantastic. Well, I'm very much grateful for your time and your expertise in sharing these marvelous scientific insights into what the Quran has already been telling us, of course, and just confirming another a scientific confirmation of the Quran in a new way. We usually hear about the other scientific confirmations of the Quranic descriptions of natural phenomena in the world, the expanding universe, you know, the way the salt and the fresh waters are not mixing, description of the embryo, etc. But this is a new and exciting take on this, which is actually very spiritually enriching, rather than, oh, isn't it remarkable the Quran talks about natural phenomena accurately? Yes, but this has a more transformative and deeper impact probably than those facts, I think.
And it's very contemporary, and it's the new neuroscientists, and yes, inshallah, I hope. And our young people, actually, most Muslim young people actually go into sciences and technology these days. Mostly. So I think it's very attractive to see that, you know, religion is about helping us flourish in our lives. Here is the evidence for it, you know, for your well-being. And now that, you know, we'll be, inshallah, living long lives into our 90s, most of us, we do need to ensure that, you know, we are healthy and well, so that, you know, we can be of benefit still to the society at large.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much again, Dr. Hussein, for your time. And hopefully we will one day see you again back on Blogging Theology, inshallah. So thank you. Till next time.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.